This episode was brought to you by the Wizardry Foundry and the Grimoire Deck Box. Display your allegiance to the magic color that represents all that is good and fair, white. Pre-order the new Grimoire Righteous for a special discount or get a set of adjustable dividers for free. Use the code MMCASTAPR1 when you pre-order the new Grimoire Righteous. By using the code, you get a chance to win a customized Pandora Deck Box. This special early bird promo is for limited slots only, so hurry and head over their way. Their website is www.wizardryfoundry.com. That's www.wizardryfoundry.com. And one more time, use the code MMCASTAPR1 when you pre-order the new Grimoire Righteous.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered. For you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Having a good time on the couch.
Yeah, it's a couch today. It's a comfortable We're still moving couch. Around places.
Yeah.
We got like a building now that we're going to record in, but we're working on building things.
We're working on video stuff, too.
Yeah.
Trying to get that set
We hit
up.
The video stream, so we're going to do video streams now.
Yeah.
On Patreon.
$500 a month you guys have decided to give us to make video content, and now we have to follow through on the promise.
So we're going to live stream some videos. We're going to come up with some other cool stuff. Get ready.
Yeah, and it's the thing we're doing.
Time of the season.
Yeah, and it's cool. It's exciting that we have
more. Now,
now we have to push forward and figure out how to do that, and we're in the process of doing that. So that's going to be awesome. Welcome to the podcast. We're on Twitter.
I'm Kess Wiley, at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
And we're at the MMCast.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, this is a plug at the front. I never do this for the show, but we have our 50th episode of Action Movie Anatomy, my action movie podcast, on Wednesday.
You're plugging your yeah, cool.
Live at 3 o'clock, and we're doing The Rock. Welcome to The Rock.
Okay.
Which is like the greatest. So if you guys like that, it's called Action Movie Anatomy. We're streaming live at 3 p.m. on Wednesday.
Cool.
Sorry, I just stole that.
Like The Rock.
The Rock.
Didn't like Shyamalan or some terrible person write that movie?
The Rock is written by, I can't remember.
I thought either someone amazing or, isn't like Christopher Nolan direct?
No, it's definitely directed by Michael Bay.
It's Michael. Okay, maybe that's it.
It's Michael Bay.
I'm going to look it up while we talk. All right, so beyond that, finishing off plugs.
Yes.
The Command Zone.
Yep.
Check out our sister podcast. They're the best.
RocketJump.com.
Do all the Commander content.
And also, we have a Patreon.
We do. We talked about it because we're now at $500. It's great.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, like, we're doing this pretty much out of pocket. We don't really have, now with help from Patreon, we're able to do some cooler things. But we kind of take our time out of our schedules. You're gainfully unemployed. and I'm at my own startup that is also not technically paying me anything. I guess it's paying me enough to survive. But your help is so appreciated.
Yes.
You guys have no idea.
It is helpful.
Not only do we appreciate it from like, oh my God, people like us enough to give us some amount of money, but we also appreciate it because we're using it to survive.
Making the time
and
to
make
like,
this podcast
to
happen.
Do this when we're both like trying to like crush it in our entrepreneurial lives as much as we are. Trying, operative word, is we love it and we want to keep doing it. And it's very helpful, even the small amount. So all of you, by the time you're listening to this, should have your playmats that you, if you're Swagbox members, except unless in the case you're international, in which case you got an email from me, we're going to be sending out the first and second month together.
Because international people are far and it's expensive to ship you.
A bunch of stuff to Australia costs money, so we got to do that correctly.
Yep.
But the rest of you, if you're wondering where it is, like any day, legitimately any day, and when you do get it, just snap a picture and put it on Twitter.
I guess one official announcement for the Patreon, because I do want to make this. Moving now, and we promise this, so for the people that have donated up to this point, it'll work how the old system was. So the old system for the swag box level was the first month you donated, you would get the Masters of Modern playmat. And then from that subsequent month, you'd get whatever that month would be.
Right.
And we've realized it's probably more exciting because we hope we can come up with cool ideas for every month, that whatever month you join, you'll just get the cool thing for that month. And that also allows us to kind of mix up the playmat as things go on. So like right now, the people that got the playmat for the first month and the up to this point will get the Masters of Modern with the black background and our logo text, and it looks really classy. But sometimes in the future we might get some cool artist to do a sweet drawing of me and Ben punching bears in the face or some other awesome thing. And so we would want to do a playmat of that, and we wouldn't want to make it so the people that have gotten playmats already to not get the new one. So we're just going to rotate whatever month you join, you get that most recent Patreon reward.
Yes. And Yeah, that is how that is going to work. There's probably several of you, I know there are several of you that have paid the $10 level and have the option to send in an audio message for us to read on the podcast. And we've read one, but there's a couple others that you guys need to still do that if you want to take advantage of your Patreon level. Obviously, no obligation, but you have the option if you'd like to. So send us your funny message and we'll play it on the podcast. You'll get to speak to the podcast.
So I think it was just that Michael Bay directed a good movie.
Well, The Rock is like...
Being The Rock.
Not even really good.
Have you heard the theory that The Rock... I mean, this is way front-loaded, and we should maybe talk about this maybe towards the end, but The Rock... There's a theory that The Rock is actually a James Bond movie?
No, that doesn't surprise me. That's really awesome that he's James Bond.
Yeah, so the plot is that he's James Bond, and like... Because you know he's in The Rock in the beginning, and then he escapes, and then he's coming back to get back in The Rock? Well, the time that he was in The Rock kind of fits timeline-wise at the exact time where Sean Connery left being James Bond and then came back afterwards.
Yep.
So the theory is that while he was not James Bond...
Well, he didn't ever come back.
Yeah, Jim, he left for two movies. What's his face filled in as James Bond, and then Sean Connery was James Bond again.
Roger Moore?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not my James Bond knowledge of the exact.
Your years
Bond
are mixing up a little bit here, but that's a sweet theory. Let's talk.
Let's do that at the end.
Let's make The Rock our few minutes to talk at the end of the episode.
Okay, well, I've never actually seen the movie.
How have you never watched The Rock? Never mind.
We'll get there. We'll talk about like stuff in our lives at the end. All right, okay. Cool. So on to stuff. On the Magic Lives, SEG, Star City Games did two modern tournaments, the Invitational, the Classic. I actually have no idea what the difference between them is. My guess is that the Invitational you have to get invited to.
That's, yeah, well, the Invitational
by
is...
By title.
The Invitational is their big...
That's like, their Pro Tour-ish.
Yeah, I think there's three or four a year or something like that.
Okay.
I've honestly, guys, only ever played in one SCG event. They're super, super big.
I played in a few, but I only played in the ones that went back when there was, like, Legacy every Sunday, no matter what, and Standard every Saturday.
Well, they're also, like, they're very big in, like, Virginia, and they're, like, very big over there. But, like, over here in LA, we get the event, but then we don't really get much else. Like, it's not really... Like we don't interact on a face to face.
It's hard to
level.
Get to invitational stuff, so it's hard to be motivated because the EV is low because you're not going to be able to go more than one SCG event a year.
Right, we just don't interact a level.
But the other, and then I'm pretty sure a classic is just anyone can show up.
Yes,
would be my guess. Nah. And if we're wrong, please tweet at us.
Yeah, exactly. So
two things. First off, invitational, pretty non-diverse. 50% Abzan.
No, I think that's the classic.
No, invitational, because that was the one with the top eight.
Let's see. Top eight. Invitational. Yep.
Yep. Told you. So lots three copies of Abzan. One thing I do want to say here, though, is because especially when you look at the invitational or the classic, you see how this is kind of rings true.
Yeah.
But this was a deck that was very good before Eldrazi.
Yep.
This was a deck that was very good during Eldrazi. And so the people piloting these decks have the last nine months of... practice. Plus it's basically Birthing Pod, so like this is a deck that vaguely has been around in the format a while. You have a lot of practice with the deck. This is the deck, you know, kind of how like decks from a previous Standard will be good when Standard rotates, if they have most of their cards for that first week before actual people take time to try to fix the format.
Yeah,
so obviously the first tournament going to be done really well by the people playing the best deck, one of the best decks before the rotation or before the banning, and now one of the best decks after the banning are going to do decently.
Yeah.
Then when you apply a bunch of people playing in a much bigger tournament, the format's insanely diverse.
Yeah, it is. Like, it was interesting looking at these lists. Like,
you have to go down to 11th place before you get a repeat of a single deck in the top 16 for the classic. It goes like Zoo won it, followed by Lantern Control at second, Abzan Company at third, Burn, Elves, Jeskai Thopter Foundry, which is the only Thopter deck to do well in either of the SCGs, Scapeshift, which has been in the top eight of all three modern events since the banning, which is one of the reasons Prismatic Omen spiked.
Right.
Scapeshift, Mardu Tokens, which is sweet. We actually had Joe Jancuck on Twitter tweeting at us yesterday all the little secrets about that deck. Burn, again, Death's Shadow Aggro, Abzan Company, Merfolk, Green Red Eldrazi. So the first time we'll see a new Eldrazi deck.
Okay.
Deck looks pretty sweet. It's using the red-green, the artifact that taps for mana.
Red-green Eldrazi artifact taps for mana.
No, it doesn't tap. It's not Eldrazi. It's a Signet. It's not a Signet. It's the Prism? Other. No, it's not a Signet, but it's the old Signets.
Talismans.
Red-green talisman.
Yes.
Affinity, Scapeshift, again, and Jund. So that's a pretty diverse 16. There's only three decks that saw two showings in the top 16 of that tournament.
Yeah, usually the SCG events post-banning or post-unbanning, they're interesting, but they don't tell us very much.
So something about these events, A, generally pros don't like breaking out their tech at them. If they've found something new in the format, they're going to save them for the next big tournament that gets them pro points. So they're going to be more likely focusing on GPLA. Also, in general, the people, like pros don't travel, or people don't travel as far. SCG events are generally people in that area, other than maybe the Invitational, but people in that area. So they're not going to be... having as much of a diversity and how much people are changing it. And like, even in the Invitational, like that's a format that warrants playing well and warrants picking the deck you're probably going to be best at, but it doesn't warrant you locking yourself in a cabin with 30 of the best players in the world for three weeks and working your hardest to figure out what the format's like. It's, oh, I have to be good at this tournament. I'm practicing for 2 weeks, but I'm going to practice with the deck I'm comfortable with.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that these, you always see with these SCG events, like you people get excited usually because there's like a lot of interesting stuff or diversity, or somebody will break out like some new cool tech, but it's difficult. You don't want to read into it too much as far as what the format's really going to look like, what you should be investing in.
Yeah, and I think you should look at patterns. I think obviously Abzan Company is probably one of the best decks to look out for. Like that should be in your gauntlet. I think the new red green Tron decks, or not Tron decks, the red green
Eldrazi.
No. Scapeshift decks.
Yeah.
With Prismatic Omens and Primeval Titans are something that should be in everyone's wheel, because I think that's now a pillar of the format, maybe.
Right.
One thing that's interesting is how bad Thopter Foundry did this over those two tournaments.
People were gunning for it.
I mean, like most of these decks also are like playing white, so Stony Silence is everywhere.
Yeah, I mean that's definitely a problem with that. Obviously, you never really know. You never know in actuality what the unbanning or the banning of a card is going to look like in Modern. The power level is so high in the format, and it's such a diverse format with its answers to things that, like, you'd like to think that Ancestral Visions and Sword of the Meek are both, like, so cool and interesting that they're going to warp the format in some way.
Sure.
You just don't know, though. It could just as easily just kind of bomb.
I also think this is kind of something that has happened with every unbanning. So part of the problems with unbannings, not problems because they're great, but is... everyone is like, oh, that's a card everyone wants to play and will be playing. Right. So I need to make sure I guarantee a few sideboard cards. Like Scapeshift, when Valkut got unbanned, Scapeshift did nothing at that Pro Tour. It took until that summer when people kind of forgot about it and stopped playing three sideboard Sowing Salts or three, you know, Ghost Quarters out the wazoo, that it started putting up results and being like, oh, I'm a legit deck that's a good piece of this format. And I think this is going to be the same here. You know, in the first couple of weeks, people are going to have weird processors to get rid of visions, or remands are going to be everywhere, or just graveyard hate and rest in peace, like rest in peace and or Stony Silence that just wrecks Thopter Foundry.
Right.
So like, for the time being, it's not going to do great. But as soon as 3 weeks from now happens and people forget about how good that deck is and or aren't at, think, oh, it's bad, then it'll just wreck a tournament and people will be like, oh, right, we should be worried about that deck.
Right. So I think it remains to be seen. It's cool to see Zoo win. That's always fun.
Yeah.
The Zoo winning to me is always like, I think, is a healthy thing. That's like, to me, that's like a healthy format thing, because Zoo is like your staple aggressive creature deck in the most basic sense.
Sure.
It's never going to be possible for a Zoo deck. I mean, I guess you could say that it was at the time it banned Green Sun Zenith, but it's highly unlikely that a Zoo deck with what this format can do would ever be so oppressive that you would have to really be worried about it taking over.
I agree with that. I think we're also in the, like, we now live in a format that's aggressive because it's a new format, and in new formats, aggressive decks do the best.
Right.
Like, that's the other thing holding Thopter Foundry back, I think, is that Thopter Foundry is a control deck piece card, same as Ancestral Visions, and control decks never do amazing in the first week of a format.
And that's why they talked about with the unbanning. That's one of the things one of the reasons they did that was because
they wanted to encourage control.
Yeah. So, cool. Speaking of which, we have kind of an interesting subject to talk about today.
I don't know how that segue makes sense, but
control, I guess, control versus aggro.
Sure.
This is
kind of. So we're talking about mill.
So for those of you who are like, why are you talking about mill? When has mill been good? Well, here's the reason we're talking about mill.
Mill's been good a few times. Well, we'll get into that.
There's a couple reasons. So the reason I had the idea to talk about mill is because recently I have been playing Hearthstone. I've been learning Hearthstone at the same time as playing Modern and all that and doing this podcast.
Traitor.
I'm learning it. I think it's an interesting game.
Actually, I wish I could do a good Stormtrooper voice.
Yeah.
I want everyone just to imagine me beating Ben with a weird lightsaber, Stormtrooper, baton stick.
As I'm learning Hearthstone, I'm realizing that as intuitive as the game is, there are still things where I'm like, this is not magic. So I have to evaluate each of the strategies as its own thing. And I have to give credit where credit's due if something's good or bad. Because in magic, for me, a lot of things are kind of second nature. The idea that mill is probably bad has always been the case. Like, very rarely is mill good. Very rarely is it smart to go all in on mill. The same can be said for life gain. However, in some corner cases, people have found those to be good. So the reason I thought of it is because there are still players that are getting into modern for the first time. There are people that find this podcast because modern is a new subject to them.
So for those players, I do want to break down, what is mill?
Yeah, the first thing we want to do is we want to talk about functionally why mill exists. And the reason we're doing this, guys, is because this. There, unless you're talking about cards that state you win the game, there are three ways to win in Magic. One of them is life loss, which is a pretty tier one strategy, I'd say.
And these are inherent to the rules. So there are a bunch of ways to win.
Yeah.
Love cards that say you win, but these are things that without a card saying you've won the game,
yeah,
there are three ways to win.
You can get someone to zero, the most tier one strategy in Magic. You can get someone to 10 poison, which is a very tier one strategy in Modern, and it is played in one deck.
It's played in one deck in every format it's legal in, but I would say it's a tier one strategy in every format.
And the last is...
In fact, Legacy is a deck.
Mill, which if you don't know what that is where it is milling, which is the common term for putting your opponent's library into their graveyard. And when they have to try to draw a card and there are no cards left in their library, they lose the game. They've designed cards since the beginning of Magic, starting with Millstone.
Which is why it's called Mill. So Millstone was a card that let you very slowly put your opponent's cards into your graveyard.
Into their graveyard.
The reason it's called Mill is because Millstone exists.
The ability has gotten far more aggressive over the years.
Sure, because it ends up being generally a bad ability. For whatever reason, and we'll talk about some of these reasons, milling your opponent has always been something that everyone tries. Like, I don't know a single person in the history of me playing Magic that at some point in their Magic career hasn't built a mill deck.
Yep.
I had one. It had two of the 3/5 Hydra, blue-black Hydra from Conflux,
Nemesis,
I think.
Nemesis Reason?
Yes.
Sweet.
This is Zendikar standard block. moving on.
Sweet.
But it's partly because there's generally a lot more cards in players' deck. There are a lot of decks that actually benefit from you putting cards in their graveyard. But the reason it works is so Richard Garfield needed to make a mechanic, or needed mill to kill you, needed it so when you decked, because he needed a way to make sure the game ended, and he needed a mechanic to deal with an empty graveyard. And the easiest way he figured it is you have a 60-card deck or a 40-card deck, and so why not just you lose? Give another option for killing someone, but it makes it so the game has an inevitability that won't last forever.
Right.
Because, like, literally Magic would last forever. You could have a matchup where you would never finish your game if each opponent never could deck.
So it's an out. It's an out to outrageously long games. So, that being said, Mill has never been... It attracts everybody, I guess. If you're a brewer out there, it's highly likely at some point you looked at Glimpse the Unthinkable or you looked at some card like that and you thought, oh, that's really interesting. That could be so cool.
Well, it's an extremely popular casual archetype, which is why Glimpse the Unthinkable is like a $25 card.
Yeah, right. I have definitely tried to build mill decks before. I've taken them to modern PTQs before. And we will probably not talk about that as much today as just the general mechanics of how this works.
We'll probably talk about it.
And also, we want to talk about what is good about mill, what it would take to push mill into kind of a tier one strategy.
Why is mill classically bad?
Mill is classically bad for the same reason that burn spells like Lava Spike are classically bad unless you can push them over the edge in a deck with enough redundancy to make them good. And that is because they interact with a zone that does not change until it goes from 0 to 100, 0 to 100%, so to speak. So it doesn't matter if they have 4 cards left in their library or if they have 60. They have to have 0 or it doesn't matter.
Right.
The same can be said with a Lava Spike. You could play an entire deck of Lava Spikes, but if they're at 4... and they can kill you before you can get them to 1, to 0, it doesn't matter. It's totally irrelevant.
Right.
Lava Spike specifically because it doesn't interact with anything else.
And a small difference between the two, and the reason Burn has classically been a decent deck versus the other, is that me losing my life total, is always something that's being dealt with, and every single card in Magic is dealing with that being a factor. So do 3 damage to target player if I'm being aggressive in that way is more relevant. The other thing that I say would be more comparable is life gain. Because for the same reason, your life total doesn't matter until you're dead.
Right.
So with life gain, unless you're playing against a burn player, like your opponent's going to eventually try and outvalue you.
Right.
And because you just spent cards to just gain some life, like one white mana for gain five life, which is the new card from Shadowfudge and Innistrad.
Yeah.
Isn't that good of a card because one mana for five life is an entire card. That card isn't worth that effect. And so your opponent's going to kill you. Mill, where I'm not going to kill my opponent until they're at zero, and every one of my cards literally does nothing to stop my opponent from killing me. Often. The best mill cards are either going to be the ones that have a high level of mill, so they're like just so above and beyond, like Glimpse the Unthinkable, or they're cards that just are incidental mill. So like Baneslayer is an incidental life gain spell, and that makes life gain really good. Same as Sphinx's Revelation. But cards that mill someone and do something are generally would be slightly better.
So like if you go just off basic rate, like let's take the two cards we mentioned here, Lava Spike versus Glimpse the Unthinkable. The first difference is obviously that one mana for three damage is a much more redundant effect than two mana for 10 cards. They've turned a lot more of them. But if that's the case, by the time you have cast several glimpses, your opponent starts the game seven cards in hand, so they have 53 cards. You're getting approximately 20% of their deck for one spell. Pretty much. Because you're not going to win on turn three, so they will have drawn three cards. So you're getting, each time you cast Glimpse of the Unthinkable, you're getting essentially around 20% or a little more than that of their deck.
Sure.
If in fact there were three copies of Glimpse of the Unthinkable, if there were, you could play 12 of them in a deck.
Well, there's,
perhaps
there's
Mind Sculpt.
Archive Trap, Mind Sculpt, Glimpse of the Unthinkable.
Breaking, on behalf of Breaking and Entering, mills for eight.
Breaking. And then you have
Tome Scour, deals mills for five, for one.
That seems bad.
It is bad.
That seems comparable to
what?
The life gain five life for one.
So the point
that they're the exact same card.
The point of this is you would essentially have to cast Glimpse the Unthinkable five times to win the game.
Sure.
Maybe four if the game goes long, but in a game of Modern, probably five times. You have to cast Lava Spike seven times, essentially, unless they have cracked fetches, which they probably have. But let's just say for the sake of argument, they haven't. You have to cast it seven times.
Yeah, but Lava Spike comes along, so second tier would
and
be
cost one.
Creatures that do this.
Yeah.
Goblin Guide is a much better creature than Hedron Crab.
Yes. Well, yes and no. Yes, it is. 100% it's better. But no, it's not better if you hit critical mass, because Hedron Crab is a far more unique creature to what it's trying to do in any mill deck than an aggressive 2-2 for one.
Unique, sure, but I mean, Goblin Guide A is probably the most aggressive creature ever printed.
Yeah, I mean, okay, it's fair. And we'll get into specific cards as we get further into this, but the premise here that we're trying to break down right away is what does the idea of milling your opponent, what does that represent in terms of clock, why it's bad, which we discussed already.
And the real reason it's bad is milling your opponent never does anything to what they're doing to you.
It doesn't affect the board. It doesn't affect their hand. The only zone
most
that
burn spells,
with...
yes, Lava Spike doesn't, and Lava Spike is probably the worst card out of burn decks in Modern. It just is efficient for its rate, but most other cards in the deck have some other functionality or can run away with the game by itself.
Right.
Goblin Guy being something can run away by itself, but also could kill a 2-2 or kill like attacking into a Bob and having them have to kill it so they, you know, don't draw any more cards is
right.
A decent effect, but when it comes down to it, most mill cards don't do anything, and or if they do something, like milling is way more of a you win or you lose.
Yes.
Versus burn, which is a little bit less of that, because the game is so around life totals.
Now, and that's on a very basic level. Now, stick around to the end of the podcast, because when we get to the end of the podcast, we will be talking about specific strategies, and more than that, specific cards that make mill maybe more interesting than you realize. Not necessarily good, but certainly perhaps...
So now that we've talked a bunch of crap about mill...
Yeah, so the reason we're doing this is because you can win the game milling your opponent straight up. And not only that, but you can win the game by placing cards from your opponent's library into their graveyard in conjunction with other effects, which is also interesting. Doesn't
sure.
really ever get talked about. And there are cards that have been printed that take severe advantage of this that are already good and become far better if you're doing something like this. So
classically, mill has been good. So now we've talked a bunch of crap about it.
Yeah,
mill has been good in three different ways.
Yeah.
One is combo mill. So something like Painter Server combo, where
yep.
you, with a card Grindstone.
Yep.
So Grindstone says target opponent mills.
This is Legacy, by the way.
Yeah, Legacy. This is a Legacy combo. Mills some amount of cards, I forget what it is, target player's graveyard. If there are two cards of the same color, repeat this effect. Painter Server makes every card in their deck the same color. They mill their whole deck out instantly, all at once. They lose. Unless you have Emrakul or something.
and that's all in combo mill. Then you have inevitability mill, which
Lantern control. So this is something that's been good in modern since Lantern, at least. Yep. And in standard generally is a good control finisher in mirrors, especially where Nephalia Drownyard, for instance, back in Innistrad control decks, where that was a card that just, you know, your land allowed you to kind of start putting a clock on your opponent where neither of you were doing anything. Out of, you know, Jace, 5-mana Jace. Right. Original 5-mana Jace, one that had the mill 10 ability, Jace Memory Adept, another card that was a control mirror. Like, control mirrors often, mill is really good. And then just generally, like, over time, mill has always had... It's the reason that Artifact, the 1-mana, sack it, gain 4 life, and shuffle your library into your deck.
Elixir
of Immortality is good in control decks as a mirror card because it just lets your deck to never run out while your opponent eventually will run out. And Lantern takes this and, you know, puts it on speed and makes it 10 times more, where their literal game plan is to just make it so you don't do anything and you mill out your deck.
Yes, one of the more frustrating and boring decks to play against ever made.
Yeah, but it's sweet.
Do you have Lantern built?
No. I probably should build it.
I think I have most of the cards.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm missing a lot of the pieces randomly.
Yeah, I think I have several. I have 3 Lanterns maybe.
Okay, that deck is sweet. I love that deck. It's exactly my kind of, like, you know.
Prison,
yeah. And last is Self-Mill.
Okay.
So... this one we didn't really mention, but while you can always mill your opponent, you can also mill yourself. And if you build your deck in the right way, a target player, if I'm milling my own self, it could be drawing that many cards by milling.
Right.
If I have enough lands that do something in the graveyard, enough creatures like Vengevine.
We're not talking about the only ways that mill can be used. We're talking about the only ways that it's ever been good.
Correct. Yes. So like Dredge is the most classic example of this. Sometimes Reanimator, but more often Dredge is the one that's like all about just like, I need as many cards in my graveyard as possible. I'm going to keep milling myself until I get that. Dredge is one of the most efficient ways to do that.
Yep.
Other ones that have classic, Hedron Crab, which we mentioned, which has the ability for whenever a land enters the battlefield, target player mills 3.
Yep.
Milling yourself with Hedron Crab is definitely a
good thing,
a good option, because you can get lots of Vengevines or other creatures, Blood Gas, in your graveyard pretty quickly. There's also the draw card, mill 2.
Thoughtscour.
Yeah. And this same self-mill strategy, and Thoughtscour is kind of the prime example of that, can also be used with Delve.
Right.
And that's what kind of the blue, black, red Grixis decks are doing when they're playing with Tasigur, or especially when Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time were legal in the format, the Treasure Cruise decks and the Jeskai Ascendancy decks.
Because making your graveyard into a resource, mana-wise, is extremely powerful if it can be done correctly.
Sure.
Which is why Delve is kind of just overpowered to begin with.
Woo!
Yeah.
Love that. Love the mechanic.
So that...
Hashtag bring Dig Through Time back.
Yeah, I love Dig Through Time. So that's how mill has worked classically in power formats as an actual win condition.
Yeah, like, has there ever been an era where just straight up aggro mill has been a thing?
And you don't mean aggro mill, like, I'm going to talk about aggro mill. You're talking about devoted all-in mill.
Like, my plan is I'm going to cast spells and creatures that mill my opponent until they are dead. Not in a combo way, not in a...
Yeah,
in
a straight up card
not
for
in a,
card.
I'm trying to attrition my opponent out and hopefully their deck eventually goes away.
Rate.
But, like, I'm going to plus Glimpse of the National, Hedron Crab, Archive Trap to get them to 0.
I don't think it's ever been good. And the funny thing is they continue to try to print this rate and push the rate, which leads me to believe that eventually it actually will. Eventually there will actually be a way to do this. I think it's pretty close now, because just the last couple of years. So Breaking is the second best rate that's ever been printed for 2. And that was just like 2 years ago or something like that. Because you get 8 cards for 2 mana.
Sure.
So you have 10 is the best ever for 2.
Well, Mind Sculpt, which is 7 for 2, which is also still pretty high.
Still
pretty
good. Pretty
recent.
So those would be the 3. I still think Mind Sculpt is not quite good enough. The other thing is that those all costing 2 is a problem.
Sure.
You really, to for all in mill to work, you would need something more powerful than Tome Scour at 1 for 5. And also, or you would need to more consistently be able to make Archive Trap work. Now, Archive Trap states... it is a trap for blue 3, target player. Is it target opponent or target player? I think it's target opponent, because I think if a target player, people would use it on themselves.
Yeah, it's target opponent. If they search their library, you can cast it for 0. It's a 5-mana spell normally, and they mill 13 cards.
Yeah, target opponent puts the top 13 cards of his or graveyard into his or her library, which is supposed to be, obviously, flavor-wise.
If that card's already not over closer to $10, I'd actually say that that card is probably... So something that, to know about this kind of... And I've mentioned it before, but like...
$6.61.
Casuals love mill strategies.
Yeah.
And I mentioned everyone kind of starts out thinking, oh, that's a cool way to win. I can do that. There's the right card. Standard always has like enough mill cards where you can put together a mill deck. It's just never good.
Right. Yeah. So I think the rate is getting dangerously close to there being an actual deck here. There's a couple things that hold it back, though. So number one, in Modern, there's an Emrakul strategy. That's a problem. There's a deck that plays Emrakul.
Not as much as there used to be.
Yeah, and I remember years
ago... Tron being gone definitely helps. Or Ayavugan being no longer in the format definitely helps.
Helps the mill deck.
Helps the mill deck.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting about mill decks is that you, because of Surgical Extraction being a legal card in Modern, some of the decks, you're able to mill them on turn one or two, see what they're playing, and actually extract... a major part of their strategy.
So the Surgical Extraction and or Extirpate, which are cards that say exile target card in a graveyard and then search your opponent's hand, graveyard,
and library
for cards of the same name and exile those as well. So this is generally very good against combo. The best I've ever seen this used was Zach Elsick when he won with Lantern Control.
Yeah.
He got the Scalding Tarn out of the graveyard and got, I think, two Scalding Tarns out of their hand and just like wrecked his opponent.
And then Frank Leopold get... didn't he at the Pro Tour do like, he just natural the collected company and hit the collected company in the person's hand? Like he just guessed it. He had no information
maybe.
At all. And it was just, or he might have gotten two collected companies. It was like so brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like an interesting way you can use mill. But in any case, yeah, I don't think that there has ever been an all-in mill spell. I mean, so there's also the other cards we're forgetting that would go into that all-in strategy are Mind Funeral, which is blue, black, one. Target player.
Sure. And this card's always interesting because it doesn't really get there most of the time.
I think it's target player puts cards from the top of his library into his or her graveyard until he hits four land cards. So you can hit more than 10, but usually you hit like something like right in like the 7 or 8 or 9 range.
Sure.
So it's just like a little worse than the others. At 3, I think it just gets like not good. And then you can kind of go in with like Snapcasters if you want to try to like double up on your spells.
Yeah, I like Snapcaster Mage than those just because you like two.
It's a blocker. Using
it. It's a blocker, but you also get your Glimpse of Unthinkables back.
Yeah.
Jace also probably seems pretty decent in this
Jace
deck
because
you can.
I forgot about that.
You can flashback the spells and they're going
to. That actually adds a lot to this deck. I didn't think about that.
You get the loot and get the things you need.
Yeah, that's actually really
Protect
clever.
Yourself if you flip it. Yeah. God bless you, Ben.
Excuse me. anyway, that is like sort of the general idea of all in mill. And if I'm sure we'll revisit that idea a little bit here as we continue to go forward. But so that we discussed self mill,
yep.
Which is gonna be dredge strategies. We discussed so the one thing that people are forgetting is cards that take advantage of the process of cards being placed into their graveyard or how many cards are in their graveyard. So that's like the strategy of mill that like doesn't get discussed as much. So for instance, cards like Jace's Phantasm. It's a 1/1 flyer for one that if an opponent has 10 or more cards in their graveyard, he becomes a 5/5 flyer. Obviously, there's a the dream draw there is turn one Phantasm, turn two Glimpse, attack for 5. So that's like right built into a strategy where you get a 5/5 flyer
sure.
on turn two. Obviously, cards like Tarmogoyf already become very good if the graveyard is full of cards. This just makes Tarmogoyf better. It just makes your Tarmogoyf probably most of the time.
Yeah, it makes it decent, but like, I guess with the Tarmogoyf plan...
Who cares?
He's already good. When it comes to self-mill strategies, this is where more I find interesting cards. So like, I think Knight of the Reliquary is an underlooked self-mill strategy card.
Yeah.
Just because when you self-mill, you have lands in your deck.
Yeah.
And those lands in your deck are now going to be
yeah.
in your graveyard, making like casting a turn 3 Knight of the Reliquary...
Yeah, like
as a 5/5 at a minimum, like sometimes it's like a 8/8 is insane.
Yeah, like I mean, if you turn to Glimpse yourself and like your crazy five color,
or even like just a more often one is like the Hedron Craft plan, which
yeah.
is the or even Satire
Wayfinder?
Satyr Wayfinder.
Satyr.
I don't think I'm ever going to say that card, and then we're going to talk about how I should correctly say it. Satirical Wayfinder, who you. Look at the top 5 cards of the library, put a land in your hand, and put the 4 in the graveyard.
Yeah.
Really good with Knight of the Reliquary. Really good with cards. Like I actually think another self-mill card that's really underrated right now is Splinter Fright.
Yeah, that card's good.
So this is a green for 2 colorless for an XX that is his power and toughness is equal to how many creatures are in your graveyard. And then at the beginning of your upkeep, you mill 2 more cards every turn. So he self-grows.
Yep.
The key is that he has trample.
Yes, that it's actually one of the reasons. He's good, and Ghoultree is not, because no matter how quickly you can get a Ghoultree on the table, it's just a 10-10.
Right.
That doesn't, like, can't get through. Like, tokens just block it.
Like a 3-drop 8-8 that has trample.
Yeah.
Should see more play.
Yeah, because a Ghoultree could very easily be a 10-10 on turn 3. Like, right. Would not be very hard.
But it's just a 10-10 that doesn't block. That's the other problem with, there's the 2-drop version of this, which is the Boneyard Worm, which is also not good because it doesn't have trample. Like, yep. The fact that it has evasion is an insane ability on a big creature.
Which is, and that's ultimately the reason that I think that the Phantasm is good. So the other cards that go into the Phantasm strategy of doing things as cards are placed into their graveyard.
Mindcrank?
Mindcrank's the combo one. So obviously, everybody knows Duskmantle, Guildmage, and Mindcrank, or I think most people know. Duskmantle, Guildmage, and Mindcrank, or Bloodchief Ascension and Mindcrank.
Sure.
Were the two cards together that essentially it sets up an infinite combo where every time a card is placed in your opponent's graveyard, they lose one life. Whenever they lose one life, a card is placed in their graveyard. So it just loops and they die.
Right.
And that's awesome. It's not a strategy that has ever been able to pull out of the depths of crap. I've looked at it. It's just too hard to play a card like Mindcrank in a modern deck. It's too bad of a card. And it's a creature-driven strategy that's like very easy to thwart.
I think actually Body and Mind.
Body and Mind
is a card to really look at right now. And the mill strategy here is kind of similar to how the attrition mill strategy works.
Yeah.
Where you're going to incidentally win off of it, and that's fine and great, but it's more important because it has protection from blue and green, which are the biggest ground pounders out there. So you have protection from Tarmogoyf, and you have protection from Thopters.
Yep.
And Snapcaster Mage and Jace or whatever. So having protection from those cards is really strong right now.
Yeah.
And like for a while there, it was the best Legacy sword. Because it had protection from Tarmogoyf and it had protection from Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah.
And those are the two most important things in that period that were important to have. And we're back into that era.
Yeah.
Or a similar era. So I think it's a really interesting card that people aren't looking at hard enough.
Especially if you were to pair it with like the cards we're talking about. If you were to put that into with Phantasm, it's good. It's good with Vryn's Prodigy, because it's a 0. It's same with Hedron Crab. These are all creatures that are small and get better.
What's interesting, like it's really interesting to me with like stuff like Hedron Crab, or even like just in what's out of pure mill strategies, but into like Blue Red Jeskai or something like that, where an equipment is going to see play a little bit more often, is with Jace, because Jace is a 0/2, especially if you don't want to flip him.
Yeah.
Equipping this, a 2/2 that's getting you a 2/2 every turn isn't going to kill your opponent that quickly.
2/4.
A 2/4. No, but you get a 2/2 because of the wolf.
Oh, yeah.
But isn't going to kill your opponent that quickly. But the mill off of that fact is.
Yeah.
And that's kind of also the problem with mill classically, especially when attack to attack triggers. So that's where, you know, lifelink has always been how life gain got good.
Right.
Is when life gain got attached to damage because it's keeping you alive while you're doing damage to them. Mill is always like, well, the damage you're doing to them is probably just better than the mill you're doing.
Yeah. Well, and also though, the issue with the strategy we're talking about is that if you're going to work really hard to spend 8 or 12 of the spell slots in your deck to aggressive mill cards to make your creatures better, your opponent's going to be doing something better. Because your 8 to 12 mill cards need to be interactive cards or they need to be all-in aggro cards. They can't just only serve the purpose of making your creatures better. It's like you're trying to jump through too many hoops. Like another great example of cards in the same family of what you're talking about is like the card Nihilith, which is a suspend card from Time Spiral, which is a 4/4 fear for, I think, 6 mana, but its suspend cost is black and 1. And whenever a card is placed in an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, remove a counter. So just like suspend cards, any creature that comes off has haste. He ends up being a suspend on turn 2, and then pretty much any mill spell that I'm going to play in my deck makes him a 4/4 haste fear on turn 3. Perfectly reasonable rate.
Sure.
But you have to spend a card to get the value.
Yeah, so it's almost saying, would you cast a 3 mana, or even like a 2 mana and then upkeep? You know, what's the upkeep cost?
What, cumulative upkeep?
Where if you... you pay something on this turn, the next turn you have to pay it again or pay something else to keep it alive.
Echo?
Echo. Would you pay a 2 mana Echo for 2?
Echo is 3?
No, Echo is 2.
Oh, I see.
But you have to discard a card with that Echo for a 4/4 haste.
Okay, so 2 mana, not intimidate, it's a fear, but it's almost.
Sure.
Yeah.
2 mana for a fear, but 2 mana Echo, 2 mana discard a card. for the
Well, the one thing you are forgetting though is that it's exiled when you suspend it. They can't kill it the turn you play it. So it is different because
it's okay, so it's a suspend card, but like it basically is saying you have to discard a card.
Probably not, but it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility, but that's still better than this. That's still better than this because you still have to have the correct card in your
hand.
So that or White of Precinct 6 is another interesting one.
Yeah, where it has power. It's like it's the Boneyard Worm but for your opponent.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things where you play it on turn 2 and you play a Glimpse on turn 3 or you get your value off of your Hedron Crab and it probably is a 5/5 or something like that.
But this is my problem with like Jace's Phantasm where it's like, if I'm aggro milling someone, I better be killing them through mill. If I'm trying to aggro mill them, but also aggro them with creatures while I'm milling them, that always feels so ADD and not you're too diverse in a way that neither side's going to actually kill them.
Well, okay, so then here's the one last piece of tech here that like I think is an interesting way to look at this, and this is the most to me this is the most interesting of all of these, and I've never been able to build something that I liked, but the same card we talked about, Duskmantle Guildmage. His 3-mana ability, which is blue. So he's a 2/2 for 2, one of the classic guild mages with 2 abilities.
Right.
Costs blue and a black. His blue-black colorless ability is, whenever a card is placed in an opponent's graveyard from anywhere this turn, they lose 1 damage. Which means, if you activate that ability, crack a land, or play a land, let's say you activate that ability on whatever turn, and you play a fetch land with a Hedron Crab on the table, all of a sudden you dome your opponent for 6. You cast a glimpse. You dome your opponent for 10.
Yeah, but that's a 6-mana glimpse or 5-mana glimpse. Either way, it's expensive.
It's expensive, but it's the sort of situation where if you have that guy on the table, they can't deal with him. Almost every single card in your deck is going to account for half their life total. Like,
sure, but how many 2/2s for 2 that have survived till turn 5 in modern?
There's a reason I've never been able to make right. this work, but it's a unique ability that takes the rate you're getting.
Well, I think
on
the thing to look for is a card that has that ability not attached to a creature. So
that is the ability on Bloodchief Ascension, I believe.
Yes, but you have to
jump through hoops to achieve.
And the hoops you have to jump are the exact opposite of the mill plan. They have to lose life.
They have damage hoops.
Yeah. So
which
like,
is inherent in the problem with this whole strategy.
Right. And I'm not saying there isn't a combo out there that card will never be printed. I'd be very surprised if Wizards never prints a whenever a card is put in your opponent's graveyard, they lose a life.
But it'll cost 4. It'll cost 5 or something.
Sure.
It'll be an
enchantment. It'll enchantment black and it'll be some amount of life. But one that printed, that's a deal that I would be a little bit more into. Because I can see a combo control mill deck that does something like that.
Also, don't forget the fact that Visions of Beyond got printed, and like at the time it was printed, they hadn't started going all in on this level of support. Visions of Beyond, for anybody that doesn't remember, is an instant for 1 blue, draw a card. If there are 20 more cards in any player's graveyard or an opponent's graveyard, it's draw 3.
I thought it was your graveyard.
I think it's any graveyard.
It might be any graveyard.
You keep talking, I'll look it up.
Well, no, I mean,
I believe it's any graveyard.
Mill is a strategy that I would also want to know.
It's maddening.
People want mill to be good.
A graveyard.
So people want mill to be good, but I also think mill, the moment mill is a tier one strategy, is a bad design situation.
Because it's not fun.
It's not interactive at all. There's like so much of Magic is built around me being able to stop you from doing damage to me. Or you trying to deal damage to me, that there's an interaction there that's good. That's good gameplay.
Right.
The mill mechanic is, you're either going to be able to kill me, and I'm not going to be able to do anything against you, like zero interaction, similar to kind of how Infect works a little bit, or Burn.
Right.
Or I'm going to just have the 1 or 3 cards that make it so you just can't do anything to me, and I will, no matter what, win. That's what, like, if I have an Emrakul on my sideboard, you can't beat me.
Sure.
I mean, you can over the few ways to kind of like have ways to jump around that hoop, but like most likely I'm beating you. Or if I'm just like Wheel of Sun and Moon.
Yeah.
If like mill is a tier one strategy or a tier two strategy, like I might just run one of those in my sideboard.
True story. At the PTQ years ago, this is like Modern's first PTQ season, I built the all-in mill deck we're talking about. And this is before a lot of these cards were even printed. So it was like Archive Traps and Glimpses. And I think I was playing like Mine Funerals, Tome Scour, or not Tome.
You were playing all 8 extra paid effects.
Yes. Mind Sculpt wasn't printed yet. Like there wasn't that many sweet effects. It was like Hedron Crabs. But the idea was that because of
you were
Twin...
You playing Jace's Phantasm?
No.
You weren't?
But it didn't exist yet.
Okay.
It was like the first season. So
I thought Jace's Phantasm existed then.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it didn't. So you would Archive Trap them on turn 0 if you were on the draw and they cracked a fetch. And then you would mill them. And if you happened to have Surgical in hand, you could you could like surgical their Splinter Twin from their graveyard with zero lands on the table. And that was sort of like the dream scenario idea with this deck.
Sure, sure, sure.
Hilariously enough, I was like, you know, 2-2 going into like round 5, and I sit down and the guy resolves Wheel of Sun and Moon against me in his main deck. Because
he has a combo with it or something.
Yeah,
right? He was playing like a four horsemany.
He was playing some sort of combo with Wheel of Sun and Moon.
I want to know what combo that was.
It was I remember in the same deck he was playing. In the same deck he was playing.
What combo deck plays?
Pure Sight Marrow and Paradise Mantle, the infinite untap exile on top card combo. And I don't remember why he was playing Wheel of Sun and Moon. I guess I don't think it even interacts with that, but it was in his main deck.
If someone knows what Wheel of Sun and Moon does in Modern, other than just bad graveyard hate, now that Rest in Peace exists, I would love to know what Wheel of Sun and Moon does.
I just remember he resolved it in his main deck.
Anytime a card goes into your graveyard, it goes back. It goes to the bottom of your library.
You choose a player.
Okay.
Yeah, and he chose himself, obviously.
Sure.
But I think it wasn't obvious, because I think I hadn't even played any cards yet. I think he just, like, I was like, he played it, and I like hadn't shown what I was doing yet. I was like, there's no way he's going to choose himself. Please just like choose me, because he thinks I'm trying to take advantage. And he chose himself, and I was like, I just hate you. I just couldn't even believe it. But in any case.
So the people that don't know, Wheel of Sun Moon is a hybrid green-white and a hybrid green-white for an enchantment that says pick a player. Anytime a card would enter that player's graveyard, put it on the bottom of their library. So my guess is there's some infinite loop combo he was trying to pull off where he like would mill himself
in
some way, and then the damage he'd mill would do some, I don't know. Heavily interested to see what that was about.
It might have been in there so that like if he exiled all the cards in his library to get to his combo and he had to like discard, it would like go back on the bottom of his library and he would mill himself out.
So I didn't want to talk about this. So there's a deck called the Four Horsemen in Legacy.
Yeah.
And like this is what it kind of sounds like. So Four Horsemen's Legacy, that is a deck that is banned in Legacy purely off of rules interaction. So it has a combo that basically involves milling yourself using a combo involving what's the artifact whenever you untap something?
Oh, Mesmeric Orb?
Mesmeric Orb
is sweet.
And and a Basalt Monolith.
Yeah.
So you can just untap and tap it infinite amount of times, and with you can mill your whole deck. And you're supposed to get four... basically, there's a constant of events that eventually makes it so you win. But it uses Emrakul to keep going infinite. So it can just keep cycling through its deck so it never decks itself. But if you do the combo four times and hit Emrakul early four times in a row,
right,
you'll get a game loss for slow play because you've done too many actions without affecting the board in a significant way.
Huh.
And so you get a game loss.
Bizarre.
Or you get a warning that then leads to a game loss. And so you can't play the deck in a tournament because a judge will just give you game losses by the end of the day for every match you don't perfectly successfully pull off your combo. And it's 100% luck.
Do you know that, like, now that we're talking about this mill deck and you mentioned Vryn's Prodigy, I totally forgot that Vryn's Prodigy, like, effectively is everything you wanted out of Snapcaster Mage in the aggressive version of this deck, except, like, way better because it protects itself. And also, like, okay, forget playing Duskmantle Guildmage. It doesn't work. Go back in the all-in mill strategy and play... Go back to the Archive Trap version.
I'm going to have to play against the bad mill deck.
Go back to the Archive Trap version and play white so you can play Path to Exile, so you can force them to be searching so you get your free Archive Traps.
I'm going
to
love when I have Thopter Foundry in play and you mill my Sword of the Mage.
I don't think it would matter because like you'll gain your life. And like think about this. Like, okay, so you play 4/4/4 of the good ones. Glimpse the Unthinkable, Breaking, and Mind Sculpt. So now you have, that's your 12 solid effects. Okay.
Archive Trap, because it's a
format
with fetches.
You play four Archive Traps.
That's
you can discard
eight,
it to Jace.
And you play the...
No, that's 16. That's your 16 mill spells, four paths. There's 20.
Eight extra paid effects.
I don't even know if you have to play eight. You probably play four.
Probably eight.
Maybe. I don't know. Because with Twin gone, it's not as important anymore.
Sure.
So, but then you play your 12 creatures, Hedron Crabs, Snapcaster Mages, and Jaces. So 12 plus 20. Now you're at 32. Basically, have to play two Wraths to make sure you don't just completely die. So 34. You're probably playing like Supreme Verdicts. And
sure, Damnation. Yeah. Supreme Verdict. Yeah.
So that's Merfolk. So then, like, what are you missing that you absolutely would need to make this viable?
Probably four Ghost Quarters.
Yeah, but that's in the side, or that's not sidebar. That's mana base. I'm saying there's like three.
You're more
at
spell slots. 36. No, you're at 36 spots. I thought. 20 plus 12 plus 2. Oh, you have two land card, two spells you can play.
Yeah.
I'd say you just let those be flex depending on format. I personally like engineered explosives because then you can play the Academy of Ruins engineered explosives game.
Not bad.
As just like, which is my
fave. Or you play the sword. That's what you do. You play two copies. Oh, body and mind.
Yeah. Two copies, fine. I think two is a lot.
You can throw it onto your, I mean.
I would rather
one?
Two, one and one of the Steel Shaper's Gift, which is, by the way, one of my picks for most underrated cards.
Or do you play one copy of Trapmaker's Snare?
No. But then if you play Steel Shaper's Gift, you get some sweet sideboard cards out of it. You can play like a Batterskull on the side, or you can play Steel Shaper's Gift. Card's sweet.
Yeah, maybe. This deck sounds sweet.
Sounds so bad.
It sounds awesome.
Sounds so bad. Okay. So, anything else? Oh, self-mill. We kind of talked about self-mill.
Yeah, I mean, self-mill has been much...
There's actually a lot more self-mill in the format right now than people kind of consider. Well, Gitrog came out, so there's Jund Aggrodome, which seems sweet. For those who don't know, Seismic Assault.
Yep.
The Dredge Land Darkmoor Salvage, which has Dredge 2.
Yep.
For a black land that comes into play tapped, and Gitrog, all in your hand and or in play, depending, goes infinite.
Explain.
So, Seismic Assault, in play, you play Gitrog, you have the land in your hand. You discard the land, doing 2 damage to your opponent, or a creature, or whatever. Then Gitrog triggers, because the land has entered the graveyard from anywhere. So you draw a card. So instead of drawing a card, you dredge Seismic Assault to your hand.
Got it.
Then you discard it to Seismic Assault, doing 2 damage to your opponent.
Yeah.
And then you trigger off Gitrog and rinse and repeat.
Oh, so it is, in fact, completely infinite. There's nothing that can stop it? Or
your deck being milled out before you kill them somehow.
So, yeah, you just win.
Yeah.
Seems good.
Yeah. No. It seems awesome.
If you have to play Gitrog with triple red.
Well, just Jund.
Does Jund play triple red?
It can't, well, it's not. This is Jund Seismic Assault. So you're also playing probably what's the Helm Smasher guy? The red colorless that you mill at.
Countryside Crusher?
Countryside Crusher. Or yeah. You're just playing Aggro Loam, but now you have Gitrog on the top. They were already playing Jund.
Sweet.
I feel like.
Sounds fun.
So then there's also, there's the Bridge from Below, blue, black. I think it might be Esper. Just like sacrifice decks.
Yeah.
That are running like 4 Sidisi's, Familiar, and all these other cool cards that like just go crazy. There's a sweet list. It has Blood Artists in the deck.
Ooh, I love Blood
Artists. It plays Rally the Ancestors. So it's Rally Ancestors' bridge deck that's all about just milling yourself and cycling through cards and Blood Artists and sacking them. It's sweet. What else is there? There's, classic Dredge Vine. So, and then Dredge Vine has a bunch of different options out because of the zombies. So there's like classic zombie Dredge Vine. There's Junk Dredge Vine, which I've streamed a few times recently. There's Jund Dredge Vine. There's 4-color Dredge Vine. There's like all these different ways to build it that I don't think the correct build has come out yet. I definitely think self-mill is a place that is really interesting to look at right now.
Also, if you're in self-mill, you now get to use the Creature Tutor. If you're trying to get in some sort of combo win, the new one green Delirium card.
Oh, that card's sweet. Yeah.
That's another thing I was thinking about if you were trying to go with any of these aggro. Like, if you were going to try to do the Dusk Metal Gilded Lich combo, that card is sweet because your card's now mill yourself. So
seems so much sweeter with Gitrog, though.
No, it is. I just mean that card. For any mill strategy, that card is gives you added versatility, which is cool that didn't exist before. Awesome. Gitrog.
Cool. So that's kind of mill. I don't have anything else to say about it other than it exists.
Yeah. It was something I've always wanted to talk about on here just because I know we are like more like lighthearted with the cards we like. We tend to like sort of wonky stuff. And mill, for anybody that has ever tried to get into Magic, as they've looked at it and they've wondered, and it's not that far in Modern from being something you could try to do. I mean, obviously, in some cases, it's worked. But it's not something we have to revisit like ever again. But if anybody is like looking through the catalog and they're like, oh, mill, I like mill. What do they have to say about mill? I think this is...
Sure.
I'm glad we did it.
All right, so let me tell you about my rock theory.
Okay.
Before we do that, because, this is a segment of the podcast that's more for people that want to listen to us talk about other stuff, I want to do some of the shout-outs now. Make sure to follow us on on Twitter. We're at The MMCast.
Yep.
We also have a Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheMMCast. Once again, our Patreon, really important to us. You're really helping us out. We definitely appreciate it.
Yes.
We're going to be doing live video streams now once a month. We're talking actually about just jumping the gun and doing live video streams for every episode.
Yeah.
So if you guys I know someone has mentioned that they didn't love it, but if you guys want that to happen or you think that's a cool idea, please tweet at us. We think we'd really like,
we just like
to hear what your thoughts are doing by video feeds.
Also, for the record on the Patreon, just like one last time. So we just bought a mic, like a relatively inexpensive mic, but still a mic that we could afford because of the Patreon. So we
Yeti
can have
something.
Yeah, it's like it's the Yeti. It's like a USB
it's
mic.
Actually what Josh Lee Kwai uses the command on his... when he's doing traveling around for his podcast, when he guests on things.
Yeah, the Yeti's a solid mic. I mean, it sounds super great, but we bought that through the podcast. And as far as like the things that we need to put in place to get to that point where we are consistently doing video content, we're you know doing more shows. That's the other thing. Like we have some ideas for additional content we'd like to do. It's just it's at this point right now where it would be great if we could pay a video editor. It'd be great if we could spend a little bit of money to like build a set that looked cool. So like we didn't just look like there were schlubs sitting in an office building.
Sure. Right now you'd see a white wall and a couch.
Yeah, and I mean it's stuff that over time we will be able to do, but if you guys do want to help, it make a huge difference. I mean, an enormous difference, and those of you that have, it's absolutely amazing that you're doing it, and we just wanted to thank you one more time. So,
yeah.
Tell me about your theory about The Rock.
All right, so theory about The Rock.
I was just borrowing your Humvee.
So I'm going to look up while we're talking
you
about this.
I haven't seen this movie.
I don't know. There's like a weird action movie block, which is really funny because you are all about them action movies. But Sean Connery.
For anybody who's listening that doesn't know what The Rock is.
Yeah, please explain the movie The Rock.
Here is the premise of the movie.
And this is also a preview for your podcast.
So the quick background on it. Nicolas Cage won the Oscar in 1995 for Leaving Las Vegas. Those of you that think Nicolas Cage is just a complete washed up joke, there was a time when Nicolas Cage was like hotshot leading man, mid-90s. He wins the Oscar in 95 for Leaving Las Vegas, in which he plays an alcoholic who like drinks himself to death in Vegas. It's a very depressing movie, very intense, indie, not a big, like not a movie a lot of people expected that year. It kind of came out of nowhere. Then, for whatever reason, he rips off his next three movies in a row, which are The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off. Three of the premier
good... He was in
good,
Face Off?
All three, yeah. He plays Castor Troy. He's three of the premier...
It's funny that you know the name of a character in Face Off. He wasn't in... That was John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. Is he like a random side character? Who are you
talking about
to?
Nicolas Cage.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Connery.
I'm looking up things on the internet. Wasn't half paying attention.
So he rips off these three movies and basically cements himself as like one of the action icons of our era. And none of those movies are particularly like classics. They're all just like action movie classics. They're like sort of good, bad, awesomely good. The Rock. The premise is he is an FBI agent who's a scientist. Sean Connery was like a former like English special, you know, Secret Service type of deal who got arrested in the States back in like the 60s and has been imprisoned. And they locked him up and threw away the key. And Ed Harris plays a disgruntled former army commander who takes Alcatraz hostage with like 100 tourists or something locked up and is threatening to launch these crazy missiles and blow up San Francisco if he doesn't get paid a whole bunch of money by the U.S. government. And craziness ensues. There's a SEAL team incursion. They have to try to take the island back. And Nick Cage and Sean Connery are on the island. They have to team up to try to take down Ed Harris. It is one of the premier action movies. It is ultimately quotable. It's awesome. It's Michael Bay. It's like just a classic. And we've done this show for over a year, right? Just about a year now. Every Wednesday, Action Movie Anatomy. And this is episode 50, which is really exciting for us. One of our all-time favorites. And that will be very fun for us to do. What do you got?
All right, so Sean Connery played James Bond.
Yep.
Until 1967. I had it. Where'd it go?
Well, yeah, okay. So
all right, so he was Sean Connery was James Bond from 1962 to 1967. Then he stopped, but then he came back in 1971 and 83.
Okay.
And I think it was Roger Moore, based on the small skimming of a bio, and someone can tweet at me, covered for him, but then left, and then Sean Connery came back. So there was a period he leapfrogged. Now the theory, well, so for people to know the greater James Bond theory, is that James Bond is actually not the name of the person, but the title passed down to whoever is the 007 role at that time. So either Sean Connery has died or retired or whatever, what have you.
Sure.
So the theory is that, you know, Roger Moore after Sean Connery was, well, we'll get into that, but like after
Moore is late 80s, there's Timothy Dalton and George Lazenby. I think Timothy Dalton's late 80s. I think he filled the void just before Pierce Brosnan came in 95. I think we're thinking George Lazenby, maybe, who did the... There was one guy that did one movie, and I think that
might... Yes, it's George Lazenby. Yeah. So after a hiatus of one film, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, in which George... Yeah, okay. So On Her Majesty's Secret Service, George Lazenby... Okay, yeah. So let me get into the James Bond theory. All right. So James Bond has been played by a bunch of people. There are two ways to look at this. One is that there's no continuity in James Bond and whatever, which kind of Skyfall kind of makes that assume that's the truth. Or, which is the theory I personally like a lot more, is that James Bond is just the name that they give whoever the 007 agent is, and it's a different person every time, and it's a code name, which makes sense because they're spies. Why would you be giving your real name if you're a spy to people when you're spying around? And then when one James Bond dies or retires, they replace it. So the theory goes, Sean Connery stops playing James Bond so George Lazenby can replace him for On Her Majesty's Secret Service. On around that exact time period is when the character that Sean Connery plays in the movie The Rock, he's originally trapped in Alcatraz. So the theory goes that the character Sean Connery plays is actually James Bond, is the James Bond he played.
Okay.
Now retired, now old, now going back for one last mission to help go back to Alcatraz Island.
Sure. I mean, it's a good theory. It would be a sweeter theory if you'd ever seen the movie The Rock.
Well, I didn't come up with the theory, so I'm dodging that bullet. I think I read it on Cracked.
You need to do me a favor.
Watch The Rock.
It's episode 50.
Is The Rock going to be in the movie The Rock?
No.
Well, then, what am I living for?
You should watch The Rock. We've done a podcast together for a year and a half. And this is a special movie to my podcast.
Do you have it? Do you own it?
I do.
Can you lend it to me?
No, you need to pay $4 and rent it on Amazon.
On Amazon?
Yeah.
Is it on iTunes?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get it on iTunes.
Okay, fair. That pretty much does it, guys.
So, yeah, that's The Rock.
If you guys love The Rock, check it out.
And James, a little James Bond.
Yeah, I mean, he's sweet, Sean Connery, in The Rock. Like, the theory that he was the formerly James Bond, he's like old, you know? He's like in his 60s in the movie or something, and he was like formerly like a badass.
So, the idea is he retired.
Yeah.
Whatever he did after escaping Alcatraz in The Rock. So the idea is that like he went on a mission, got arrested, went to Alcatraz. They thought he was stuck in prison forever.
Yeah.
Because Alcatraz was unescapable. And so MI6 replaced Sean Connery with George Lazenby.
Several times.
And then he escapes.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, Sean Connery back. All right, George Lazenby, you go be some other James Bond. Yeah. You're a different, you're dead now. Or, whatever, he's gone.
Yeah.
And so he comes back, does his deal, and then retires. And then he comes back in The Rock.
Well, he gets captured. He's still in prison in The Rock.
He gets put back in prison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets recaptured. Watch the movie.
It's sweet. The timelines match up. Makes that movie way better.
You're so satisfied.
Yeah.
You're like, done. I don't even have to watch it. excellent, guys.
I haven't seen Her Majesty's Secret Service either.
Well, yeah, you don't need to see that. That's like an obscure old James Bond movie with George Lazenby. Like, that's the one. He's the guy. Like, Dalton.
I wonder if anyone's favorite James Bond is George Lazenby.
There's like three people. And none of them.
On the planet. Yeah. And none of them listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Unless I'm mistaken, I think there are six people that have played James Bond.
There is Sean Connery, George Lazenby, Dalton, Roger Moore,
Brosnan,
Daniel Craig, and Woody Allen.
Okay. And soon to be Eggsy from Kingsman. Soon to be Taron.
You think he's getting James Bond?
He was announced already.
Oh, he was announced?
Yeah.
He's going to be playing James Bond in the next James Bond?
The
kid?
Yeah.
Really?
Uh-huh.
That seems made up. Are you sure?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it on the show.
I'm looking that up.
Okay, we're still recording.
Yeah, no, I'm looking it up while we're recording. James Bond. James Bond announced.
Just say Taron Egerton. James Bond, Taron Egerton. Taron. That's how you spell it. Now you're confused.
No, that's not. We don't know that yet.
I think so.
Nope.
Sure about that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because it was everywhere when I was looking at it.
Nope.
Hmm.
Nope. So tweet at us if we're wrong. Hashtag Kessler's right. Hashtag Ben's right.
Yeah, don't do that.
all right. Thanks, guys, for listening. It's been great this week. Sorry for this ending. All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.